Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, April 25th, 2024. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Addy Oye Jr. Joining me is the LaCroix Poppy, Tim Motherfucking Geddes.
Feeling real good, playing a lot of video games, watching a lot of cool stuff.
What are you playing? What are you watching?
Can't talk about too much of what I'm actually playing, but I'm having a good time doing it, Bless. I can tell you that. I mean, what I can say is, I've been saying this a lot recently, but I just am in love with my Steam Deck OLED.
I love that for you.
I bitched about this before, and I'm going to bitch about it again. I just can't get over the button placement, and I don't know how I feel like I'm the only person in the world.
Is it the
that
size of the buttons,
problem.
Or is it the fact that the buttons are falling off the controller?
Yeah, it's that. The size of the buttons, totally fine with. The size of the D-pad, all of it, good. It's the placement.
Yeah.
Because I feel like where the analog sticks are and the D-pad is, like, let's just talk about just the left side of the Steam Deck, okay? The D-pad and the analog stick. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those guys that likes both. You know what I mean? I might be playing a game where I'm like, some of the motions I like the analog, some of the motions I like a D-pad. I'm a Nintendo guy. I like playing a lot of those old classic games that kind of like can feel good in both ways. Why does my thumb have to stretch? It feels like I have to do a cross-country journey to get to the analog stick.
I feel you.
You know?
It just has a lot going on it, because they have to fit in like those touch pads on both sides too.
Which I understand, and I love those things, but I feel like those things are overly prioritized for what they are. I feel like the standard, basic thing, the left thumbstick should be the most comfortable. Just that's where your thumb goes. When you hold something, that's where your thumb should be. Or if you're crazy, you want to make the choice, it won't be the analog, it'll be the D-pad. Cool. Yeah. One or the other. This kind of meets in the middle, which kind of fucks both.
Yeah, I think we'll get there with whatever the Steam Deck 2 is, whenever we get that thing. Yeah, Kevin's brought up an image of the Steam Deck. And yeah, I get it. Yeah, there is like a little stretch you have to do. I've never felt too awkward with it, but I do hear what you're saying. Like, I do feel like there's that little bit of, yeah, this doesn't feel like I'm holding a PlayStation or Xbox controller.
And that's the bummer that I have, is that like, I know that this is, in the grand scheme of things, a small complaint, because I love how this thing runs. I love the look of it. God, I love the OLED. The buttons feel great. The product itself, very premium. I'm very surprised. I just can't believe that it's just the placement of the movement buttons.
Yeah. The D-pad is like barely on there. Like, the D-pad looks like it's about to roll off a bed.
Yeah.
Like, you ever have that in the middle of the night?
And the for sure. The D-pad, though, I'm surprisingly into. Like, I feel like it's a pretty quality thing. It's just, again, now my thumb's stretching just a little awkwardly to the left. And it's not that bad. Both of them totally usable. Like, there's been controllers that I'm like, oh, I do not like this. And like, you know, this is better than like a Wii U Pro controller type situation where it's like everything was just in the wrong place.
God.
You know?
I also picked up my Steam Deck last night, because it's funny. I was on KFGD yesterday with Greg, and one of the conversations we were having was that I'm coming off of two different reviews, right? Like, I reviewed Tales of Kinzera as out and played all the way through it, and then I also played Stellar Blade for 27 hours and played all the way through it. And I feel like I kind of want to put myself in video game sabbatical, right? Just take a break from games for a little bit and focus on other things. I say that yesterday morning, and then when I get home, what do? I fall down this rabbit hole of Super Mario 64 ROM hacks.
Love that. Love that for you so much.
I found this one on TikTok called Super Mario 64 Decades Later, and it just came out. It came out maybe 3 weeks ago. I should find the trailer and send it to Kevin. Kevin, maybe if you Google Super Mario 64 Decades Later, it'll come up. But basically, somebody recreated Mario 64 from memory with also just the concept of, all right, what would it look like if Peach remodeled the castle and you remodeled the levels?
Ooh.
And it's the same levels, but just like
a little different.
Yeah, decades later. Like, hey, things have moved on, things
I
have
love
changed.
This idea.
And I saw somebody streaming it on TikTok, and I was like, this looks really fucking cool. And so immediately I was like, fuck, I'm gonna I don't know which, I think this might have been one of the new levels they added. That's where like the game starts actually. But eventually you get to
what?
It looks wild. But then eventually you get to levels where it is, oh, okay, these are older levels, but now these are just brought up to 2024, or like with the idea of, yeah, like time has passed, things have changed and moved and all this shit. And so I went down the rabbit hole of having to learn how to patch stuff because I already forgot.
Yeah.
It's like a relearning process because you never retain that memory, like those memories for some reason. So I'm like, all right, what's the software I have to use? Okay, I have to get the Mario 64 ROM, I have to get the patch, and then I had to like open up the program and do the whole thing. I then had to spend time on my PC figuring out why I couldn't run it on Project 64, and then I solved it, but it didn't have sound. Yep, and I was like, you know what? Something. Good enough for me to at least try this on my Steam Deck now. And then I brought it over to my Steam Deck, and for whatever reason, I can boot up like the first title card, and then the game just doesn't do anything from
okay,
there.
Okay, cool. It's on Battlefield, but it's just a little...
It's a lot different. It's
super expanded. Yeah. And, okay, Rainbow Crews. Yeah, and those are like the first time
like, look how cool this looks. It almost reminds me of like Penny's Brick Breakaway.
Oh, yeah. The color scheme for sure. Oh, man. And then, plus, I feel like in another world, me and you just play Mario 64 and variations of it, dude, and that's all we do.
I've been thinking about that a lot recently, where I'm like, if I wasn't playing, like, if I wasn't keeping up with every new game that was coming out, I think I would spend a substantial amount of time just playing Mario 64 ROM hacks. This morning, I was looking up, watching videos of, you're probably very aware of it, because I'm pretty sure we talked about this, but there's Mario 64 Render 96.
Oh my god, yeah.
Which is the HD PC RTX, remaster baby. That somebody made. Yeah, that has the ray tracing, that has 60 FPS and all these things.
4K.
And it looks, and it's made to
the
look
UI
like...
The UI has 4K.
And it's made to look like the original render, like the promotional renders for Mario 64 from back in the day, and it looks so good.
It's so good.
It looks so good.
It's like Nintendo. Like, that's what we want from you.
Yeah.
When you're remaking these games.
And honestly, I'm at the point where I'm like... Maybe I need to just stop asking Nintendo and just play those fucking games. I should just break the law.
Allegedly.
Because Render 96 looks so good.
Have you ever played through a ROM hack of a game? Like the entirety of it?
I've booted up ROM hacks. I've never played all the way through a ROM hack.
Back in the day when the PSP was really popping off with emulation and all that, there was one of the first major ROM hacks for there was like a complete game was called Super Demo World, mm-hmm. and it was like a complete new game in the Super Mario World engine, and it changed my life as a kid, like realizing that there's that talent out happen. There that people that it could happen and that it could be that good, because mm-hmm. it really felt like, all right, let's take Mario World, which you've played a million times, but let's reinvent it and make it hard as hell, but not in the like Kaizu challenging way of like this is bullshit, just in a way of like, hey, let's push this further than Nintendo ever actually would.
Yeah.
And it also came at such a time that there weren't 2D Mario games coming out. Like Mario World happened, and then Yoshi's Island, which is, you know, debatable, but at the end of the day, it's not a Mario game like that.
But then you go into the 3D era and Nintendo stops making the 2D Marios for a little bit.
But even then, the 3D era, there was only for so long, there was only 64 and Sunshine.
Yeah.
Like we went from having like Mario 2, 3, World, just bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, we had Mario Lands.
But no,
Mario
no.
Advance, those, right?
No.
Oh, was Mario Land before 64? Holy shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All the Mario. I mean, two Mario Lands, because then 3 ended up being Wario. But
yeah.
Mario Land 1 and 2 both came out like before Yoshi's Island was even out. And then...
time is so weird.
Oh, yeah. It's wild. And then all the Mario Advance games, those were just ports of Mario 2, 3... Yoshi's
That's
Island
true,
and,
yeah.
and World. So this came at a stretch that I was like, I get unlimited 2D Mario that feels this
And now we have
good.
Mario Maker.
I know. It's,
which is the best of all worlds.
Totally, man. It's cool.
But I did that yesterday, and then I also booted up New Vegas again and finally got past this quest that I was just stuck on in New Vegas. And I hit a point in that game where I came to like my first moment of, oh man, this is a video game right here. Like it was like the end of a major quest. There's an event that happens, and I'm like, and I was streaming it, so if people were watching my stream, they know what I'm talking about. But it's like, holy shit, this is fucking cool.
I'm
so fascinated on where we take the TV show. We got to do the spoiler cast at some point and like talk about season 2. Because I'm like, dude, playing the Fallout games, you remember how much wacky shit and just weird, insane shit happens in the video game. And like, Fallout season 1 only scratches the surface of what's potentially possible. And like, season 1, again, very good and like has a lot of crazy shit anyway. But man... Fallout, this is a spoiler for anything. Fallout has aliens. And like, it's a thing that I forget about sometimes. But like, Fallout 3 had a DLC. I forget what the DLC was called. It's like something Zeta, where like aliens come into play.
And is that like canon to interesting.
Yeah. And like, it's a thing that you're watching the TV show. I can't imagine people watching the TV show getting to maybe season 5 or some shit and aliens show up and you're like, what the fuck? Like, that's just a thing. God bless. Mothership Zeta, thank you, chat. Like, Wafala is awesome. It's great. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah.
But also, Tim, I'm happy to talk to you about video games. Today's stories include a Paper Mario Thousand Year Door preview, Stellar Blade gets a new game plus, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about live on YouTube, Twitch, and on podcast services around the globe. If you love what we do, support us with the Kind of Funny membership on Patreon or on YouTube to get all of our shows ad-free, watch us record them live, and get a daily exclusive show. For a chance to be a part of the show, submit your thoughts and opinions as YouTube Super Chats as we go. Housekeeping for you, Game Showdown has been canceled for this week. We'll be back next week. next week on Friday for the Season 1 premiere. We just had season to take a little premiere. Bit more time. Sorry, Season 2 premiere. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're almost there.
Real exciting times. We've had a couple episodes the last couple weeks that were off season.
Yep.
Guest episodes, a lot of fun stuff. You guys can go back and watch all those because they were all bangers.
Bangers.
But the next week we return with Season 2, new and improved.
And I love that the audience showed up for the guest episodes, because you know I've been tracking the views, how episodes are doing episode per episode, and there's always the concern with any of our shows of, okay, when we bring in guests, are people actually going to watch? Because obviously, well, oftentimes people want to watch our content to see us on the content, and I was very pleasantly surprised that, you know, of course Elise and James, they're going to bring in the audience.
Of course,
you know, Alana, Abu, Ben Starr, like all these folks are going to bring in the audience. But even on like the six person Kind of Feudy episode where I think the main people that people would have recognized the most would have been Lucy and Callie, and then there's like four other people. There's Valerie Nelson. There's people that are like, you know, online that we know that we love, but it's like, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, is our audience going to show up for that? And even there, it's like, hey, this got pretty good views, and so yeah, I'm pretty pleasantly surprised.
I'm pretty
happy with y'all showing up and loving on the show. But yeah, we'll be back next week, Season 2 premiere. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Carl Jacobs, Kieran Hovasapien, and Delaney Twining. Today, brought to you by the Kind of Funny membership, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
A Baker's Dozen! Woo!
Damn, Kevin's hyped up. Starting with our number one, Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door Preview Roundup. Tim, you've demoed it. I'm going to pull in a couple previews first before I hear your thoughts on it. I want to start off with Michael McWherter at Polygon, who put up a preview titled, Nintendo's New Paper Mario Remaster Doesn't Mess with Perfection. Unlike the major graphical overhaul of Super Mario RPG, released on Switch last year, Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door will look more like your memories of the GameCube original, based on a hands-off demo that Nintendo showed to Polygon last week. Characters like Mario, Peach, and Bowser are still rendered as flattened 2D paper cutouts, and the game's world is still constructed with chunky cardboard objects. But everything looks sharper. Stages are bathed in warm, realistic lighting, and characters cast shadows and reflect realistically in pools of water. There's updated music as well, along with streamlined controls and menus. That's all well and good for Switch players, but fans of the GameCube original also get a few new toys to play with. In a new addition to Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door on Switch, she'll also offer gameplay hints and guidance. And this is referencing a character. I jumped forward. But there's a character that will offer hints and guidance on what to do next when outside of battles. In another quality of life update, a new partner ring pop-up will make it easier to swap between partners on the fly with a single button press, eliminating the need to dive into game menus. The game will also add another new feature called the Battle Master, a toad martial arts whiz who players can visit to practice moves and try out badges without needing to be in a battle. There's at least one new badge too, the Nostalgic Tunes badge, which players can equip to hear the original background music from the GameCube version. I'm going to stop the Polygon preview there, but I want to hop into this IGN preview real quick from Adam Bankhurst. He writes, before I dive too deep into what's new with this Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door remake, we have to discuss the visuals because they are simply stunning. The art style of the original is still memorable for how it feels like a pop-up book come to life. But this new remake adds so many flourishes and touches to make it truly look like a modern game that I can't wait to get lost in on my OLED Switch. Tim, you've gotten to preview Super Mario or Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door. What are your thoughts so far?
I mean, let's just be real. This is the best Paper Mario game. It is debatably the best Mario RPG. People kind of waver between Super Mario RPG and Thousand Year Door. Mm. Now, what's interesting about that, we just got an amazing remake of Super Mario RPG less than a year ago. So we are eaten out here. And I feel like The Wii is so many people. It's people that have played these games back in the day. It's people that have played these games many times over the years. And it's also people that have heard about these games being great, but never really gave them the chance for whatever reason. I love that Nintendo is giving a second life to some of these games. I am absolutely shocked that both of these projects exist. And having played Mario RPG, I know how much love and care is put into them or can be put into them. And I am very pleased to report that so far that same amount of love is being put into Thousand Year Door. And what's interesting about that is it almost feels like less love needs to be put into this one because the art style and direction of this game is second to none. And they are running with it. It looks stunning, Bless. It is so beautiful. And what I love about Thousand Year Door's art direction is it takes the concept of the Paper Mario world, and it doesn't go too far into the everything has to be paper. We're playing with the rules of paper. Mm-hmm. I feel like some of the later, like Sticker Star and Color Splash and even Origami King particularly, leans a little too far into it not just being an art style, but it kind of dictating the gameplay. And I feel like Thousand Year Door is the right balance of it's more flourishes and it's more like fun animation transitions and little cute, quirky events that happen as opposed to being like the dictating thing for like why things are happening. And the story is just super fun. The characters are awesome. There's actual characters. Like that's something that we need to talk about because a lot of the new Paper Mario games, they just have dudes.
Yeah, these are just NPCs.
They're just NPCs. You know what I mean? And it's like, but my boy Coop though, you know, he's out here. He's looking for his dad. His dad's been gone for a long time. Where is he? Is he dead?
Oh,
we keep coming up across a bunch of dry bone skull or bones.
Yeah.
And we're like, Dad, is that you? Is that you? You know what I mean?
Is that real? Is that happening?
That is real. That is real.
Oh, God.
There's a lot going on, man. But no, this game is beautiful. And I think that the new lighting system has so much to say for that, where you can see here, even in the gameplay, we're seeing like the lights shining through the castle windows, the way it just kind of like allows the layers of all the paper to really be seen.
Yeah.
It's kind of perfection, man. Like I'm obsessed with the look of this game. Similarly to how obsessed I was with Mario RPG. When we first saw that game, I was like, the remake looks a little too clean. It looks a little too just like dialed in. Whereas like Mario RPG had such a vibe to it. Then once I got my hands on it and played it, I'll never forget walking up to you and Andy being like, yo, look at this shit on the OLED. Nintendo is leaning in to the color vibrancy that they have right now with their Switch hardware. And this game is a lot brighter than the original. There's a lot more just pop of the colors. And with the lighting system, it's like they're just showing off at this point. That's all the visual stuff. I want to talk about the combat for a second, because I know you are not too familiar with the Paper Mario games.
Well, I played Paper Mario 64.
Okay.
I don't know how much different Thousand Year Door is.
Gotcha.
Combat was.
It takes it. I would say that Thousand Year Door is, I mean, it's the best Paper Mario for a reason. It takes everything you love about any of the other Paper Mario games and kind of just turns it up and just enhances it. And I think the battle system is a great example of that. Thousand Year Door works with a system where every battle is on a theater stage. And you are facing off against the different enemies. It's very classic Mario RPG type battle system where it's very active. You want to, when you use your jump attack, you have to hit A when you land on the enemy to get bonus damage. Or here with your hammer, you have to hold the analog stick back until the red star goes and you let it go. You get double damage, things like that. Or not double, but more damage there. Yeah. And there's an extra feature here, though, that there's an audience watching you. The more stylish you are and the better you land your combos and actually hit those extra moves, more and more audience members are going to pile in and they're going to get more excited and like cheer you on as you're going. Mm-hmm. And it just adds like a fun little level to it all. Visually, it looks great, but then also they might throw items at you to help you if you're doing really well, or it's like, you know, they'll give you like power-ups or whatever. But also, there's a lot of these like fun little moments where the audience might be bad guys and they'll start throwing
tomatoes
damage at you.
Oh,
you
know what I mean?
And you need to they'll throw something at you and you need to, similarly, when it hits you, hit the A button to dodge it or else you get damaged. So it's like like a lot of like fun little things happening, and sometimes they'll get involved and jump on stage and like a shy guy will pop up and like run backstage and pull down pull on one of the ropes that's holding the theater together, and like a light will fall, and it's like it's either going to fall on you or your enemy.
That's
and
awesome.
It's like there's just like a lot of these
fun little holes. Can you rewind like 2 seconds to that dialogue choice? Because it said maybe just a quick sniff. I need to know what that's about. I need to know the context.
My boy's out here sniffing, man. You know, he's doing
did
stuff.
Did you read that? He wants to smell the bottom of his feet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Get on there.
Interesting.
But it's so far so damn good, man. I'm loving everything that I'm seeing. Now that I've, like, my glowing positivity's out of the way.
Oh,
no, it's not bad. Nothing's bad. Because here's the thing. I would recommend people play this game. Like, even just from what I've seen, it's like, I know this game. I know what this game is. And it seems like Nintendo is trying to address problems, like, similar to what we've seen in the last couple of Nintendo remakes, where if there are, in Wind Waker HD, it's like, hey, we understand that a lot of the sailing stuff can be a little bit much. They came up with ways to try to remedy that a little bit. This game seems to be doing, the Nintendo saying at least, for the backtracking towards the latter half of the game. There's some issues here. They're saying that there's going to be solutions. They didn't tell us what they were, but we'll see there. But couple things. Mm-hmm. The original game was 60 frames per second. This game is 30 frames.
Oh.
You know? Have I noticed it really affecting anything? No.
Yeah, I feel like on this, if you're playing it portable, I probably wouldn't even
So here's the thing. Care. With this type of game, I don't think that really matters that much.
Uh-huh.
And then you get into the combat, and it is timed button presses. And I feel like that is where frames do kind of matter. From what we've seen, it seems like they've kind of taken that into consideration and potentially have eased up the leniency of the specific time you have to hit the button, because didn't look like there was too many major problems. So I'm going to chalk this up to, it's unfortunate on a technical fact level that this is half the frame rate. I don't think it's really that big of an issue.
Okay.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. My question, you know, Mario, you mentioned that Paper Mario Thousand Year Door is the best Mario RPG, right? With the other one in contention being Super Mario RPG.
Mm-hmm.
With both these being out, right, by the time we get to the release date of that of Paper Mario, is there a reason why you would recommend one over the other? Like, is there any reason why somebody should play Mario RPG, for example, over Paper Mario Thousand Year Door? Or are you the kind of person that's like, just play Paper Mario?
No, I mean, I it's so funny. I it's weird where I don't want to complain about this because we're getting amazing remakes of two of the best Nintendo games ever. So, like, any way we get it, I'll take it. I do wish they weren't really so close to each other. Like, already I'm like, oh, man, I just invested in Mario RPG not too long ago. And a lot of the humor, it's different, but it is similar in the sense that there is a outrageous cast of characters that's very charming and very funny, and a lot of the point of the game is the offhand comments they make and just weird things going on in a world that is familiar to Mario for sure, but also unlike anything Mario's ever seen before. Like, this the little hub world that we're seeing here is called Rogueport, and it's this little dock, essentially, like where like boats go and like leave all these like rogue like creatures and like all these like dudes that are kind of shady, and like there's like graffiti all around and like there's like broken windows and like it's just kind of different than anything we've really seen in the Mushroom Kingdom before. And just it's fun to see them kind of like stretch a little bit and get a little bit weirder with the Mario lore and world. And Mario RPG does a similar thing, but it leans more into the Square side of stuff because that was made by Square, whereas this The difference between the vibes of Paper Mario and Mario RPG are very hard to explain.
Yeah.
Because describing both of them, it sounds like I'm describing the same game, but there is distinct differences. So I would say look at both of them and try to decide which one speaks more to you. Yeah. I would say that on a top level, Mario RPG is a bit more, the comedy's more focused on animation and it's a little bit more Looney Tunes, like slapstick, like physical humor, whereas Paper Mario is a bit more like written jokes type humor.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. I can vibe with that. I will say, yeah, Mario RPG, I played maybe like 4 to 5 hours when that came out. And I think you're talking about like them releasing so close to each other. I think that's the main reason why I didn't see it all the way through, because I could feel that, one, I wasn't fully in the mood for Mario RPG at that time, but then also I was like, well, Paper Mario Thousand Year Door is about to come out. Like, I'm more interested in Thousand Year Door just because I've heard people hype it up so much, and I've just heard more about it. And you even look at the gameplay, and it looks more lively. It looks like it has so much personality. And I've seen, I think it is like the memes I've seen online, right? I've seen so many people reference jokes made in Paper Mario Thousand Year Door in ways that I've not seen as much for Mario RPG. And I think it is just like, yeah, that like slight difference of how they tackle their humor. It's all, I almost feel like Mario RPG is a bit more like dry. I think slapstick might be more the way to put it, but Paper Mario is almost like down a clown.
It is.
A bit worn away.
It plays with characters that we're familiar with just in funny ways. Like, let me give you two examples. Peach and Bowser. Mm-hmm. Peach's whole thing in this is that there's a computer that is falling in love with her.
That's awesome.
And she's just kind of dealing with it. She's like, what the fuck? This is weird. Mm-hmm. And like, that's weird as hell, but it's funny. And yeah, it works. Bowser's whole thing is like, wait a minute. Someone else kidnapped Peach? I'm not okay with this. No.
That's awesome.
And so he's just pissed off and like trying to like save her, essentially, because he's just like, fuck that. That's great. You know what I mean? Like, that's all we kind of need as a premise for this. So, so far, absolutely loving it. A funny thing, too, I feel like a lot of people that have heard about this game and like maybe they're not sold. Did you enjoy South Park?
Stick of Truth?
Stick of Truth.
I loved South Park, Stick of Truth.
I think that there's a lot more similarities between these games.
That's like, all I have to hear. Yeah. That's all I have to
now,
hear.
Look, obviously very different types of humor.
Is there sex in this?
But it is, you know, a comedic RPG, and even just like the way you're kind of walking around the world and the layers of like the kind of paper look to it all, there's a lot of similarities. If you enjoyed that, I feel like this one might be for you, even if you played Mario RPG and you're like, I don't love it that much. I would also say that Mario RPG does tend more towards the Square side of things, the JRPG side of things.
Yeah.
Just a little bit more than this one does. But yeah, it's awesome. Of course, on me, I got to talk about the music. It is an area that so far, I'm not disappointed. I'm just slightly let down. Mm. And this might be a Tim Getty specific thing, but Nintendo has this like tears to the quality of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that this game so far is falling firmly in the like, hey, we're remaking the whole soundtrack and it's going to sound good. And also you're able to listen to the original soundtrack, which I always really appreciate. But the sound quality itself of it and like the instrumentation, I'm just like, man, y'all didn't have your Mario Kart team on this.
Yeah.
Y'all didn't have the Odyssey team on this. And it's just always a bummer to me when the compositions are this good and this fun. So I'm always like, oh, man, like I really wish that y'all put in a little bit more, because I think a perfect example is 30 frames per second, totally fine. 60 would be nice.
Yeah.
The music we're getting, totally fine.
Yeah.
Higher quality would be nice. And those are the type of criticisms I have so far for what is sure to be the definitive version of one of the best RPGs ever made.
Man, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe had such a good soundtrack. Yeah. And in the same way, ARMS also had such good like theme song.
That theme
ARMS
song,
went
baby.
So hard.
I wonder if we'll ever get a sequel.
I mean, I hope not, because I did not like ARMS.
Such a hater,
if you, I mean, if they do, I hope it's good. Yeah. I hope it's good this time. Tim, let's move on to story number 2. But before we do, we have breaking news.
Wow.
Tim, BlizzCon has been canceled. I am pulling from Wario64, who links to the BlizzCon website, but then also posts a screenshot. Actually, no, let me just click in the website, because that'll be easier for me to read. Yeah, an update on this year's BlizzCon and Blizzard's 2024 live events from the BlizzCon from BlizzCon.com. After careful consideration over the last year, we at Blizzard have made the decision not to hold BlizzCon in 2024. The decision was not made lightly, as BlizzCon remains a very special event for all of us, and we know many of you look forward to it. While we're approaching this year differently, and as we have explored different event formats in the past, rest assured that we are just as excited as ever to bring BlizzCon back in the future years. Over the next few months, we'll be sharing more details about our launches coming later this year, including World of Warcraft, The War Within, and Diablo 4's first expansion, Vessel of Hatred. To celebrate these upcoming releases and to bring our communities together in new and special ways, we will soon share some exciting plans for other industry trade shows and conventions like Gamescom. We can't wait to tell you more about those plans soon. We're also looking forward to the Overwatch Champion Series stops at both DreamHack Dallas and DreamHack Stockholm. And we're thrilled to be planning multiple global in-person events to commemorate the 30th anniversary of Warcraft, which will be held in addition to the in-game celebrations across our Warcraft games throughout 2024. While these events are distinct from BlizzCon, we're harnessing all of our creativity and imagination to ensure that they carry the same spirit of celebration and togetherness. Our hope is that these experiences, alongside several live streamed event or industry events, where we'll keep you up to date with what's happening in our game universes, will capture the essence of what makes the Blizzard community so special. No matter how you choose to connect with us at these events this year, whether it be in person or virtually, we can't wait to see you there. Interesting.
Yeah, not too big of a surprise. Somebody correct me if I get this wrong, but I feel like BlizzCon is kind of staggered recently. Like, I know, I mean, obviously there was the pandemic, so nothing happened in 2020. I don't think they even did a digital one then. And I feel like it hasn't been, I feel like they've been almost on a, like, let's take it year by year type thing.
Yeah.
So this doesn't feel like that big of a shock. What is interesting, though, is Blizzard now being acquired by Microsoft. And it doesn't seem like that's why this is happening, but it is interesting to think about. But then I realized, well, Bethesda was also acquired. They have QuakeCon. QuakeCon still happens. It's just interesting to think that, oh, okay, like, you'd imagine that once Xbox gets involved with some of these things, they might just be like, hey, we're not doing that anymore. We have our Xbox events, you know? But that seems to not be the case so far, at least.
And I think, you know, part of that is that Xbox is so huge, right? You have so many studios that it probably is very hard to try and fit all that stuff into an Xbox showcase. Like, it might still benefit them to have these different events that are very specific to these brands that they have, whether it be Blizzard or whether it be Quake with Bethesda and all this stuff. I'm with you that as I started reading this article, I was like, oh, I wonder if this is like an Xbox acquisition thing of, oh yeah, we don't need BlizzCon anymore. But then you get to the part where they say that they're doing future events. And so I don't think that's it. I think to what you're saying about like it feeling staggered recently, I think, you know, whenever I think of BlizzCon nowadays, I always go back to when they announced, was it Diablo Immortal? Yeah, the mobile game, and how upset people were about that. And to some extent, yeah, like, you should probably listen to your audience. You should probably be careful about how you tease things. And then also, like, do people want the Diablo mobile game? Probably not. But I think another big factor to that is that they just didn't have anything to talk about when it came to Diablo, or bigger news when it came to Diablo, right? And so when you get there, you get to BlizzCon. What are the expectations for BlizzCon? I think BlizzCon has huge expectations when it comes to, all right, what are you going to have to talk about? What are you going to have to announce? Is the next big World Warcraft thing going to be there? Is the next big Diablo thing? Is the next big Overwatch thing? Like, what is, like, people get very hyped up, and like, the anticipation kind of gets out of control a bit. And I could see them going, hey, we just got acquired. We just did this whole thing. We just released Diablo 4. We're in the stage of restructuring, figuring things out, all this stuff. Do you then want to get to BlizzCon and not have anything gigantic to talk about? Will that upset people if you don't have a banger at BlizzCon?
Yes.
Yeah, like, let's just wait until next year, or like, let's not have BlizzCon until we know that it's going to be a banger, and do it that way, as opposed to forcing it every year and people getting upset half the time.
I'm right there with you. In terms of the big announcements and stuff, I wonder if that's going to happen, or if there's going to be a reframing to them of these events becoming a bit more community driven, even more than they already were, and trying to change the focus from expect announcements to don't expect announcements. Expect community stuff, because the announcements are going to be made at the Xbox Game Showcase or somewhere else. I don't know. I, like, to your point, Xbox has so much going on that it seems impossible for them to talk about everything just in their May or their June showcase that they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And we've seen over the last couple of years, Bethesda had a conference every year when they were their own thing, and they didn't until they had Fallout to talk about. So they did a press conference, and they had one every year since then. And then Xbox acquires them. We're seeing a little bit of a difference of how they're handling it. It was just last year, right, that we got the Xbox showcase leading directly into not a Bethesda showcase,
the Starfield,
but a Starfield thing. So I wonder what we're going to get this year, right? Like, they've already said they're doing an Xbox showcase, but no word on a Bethesda thing, right? Like, no word on a Blizzard thing. Yeah. Like,
I mean, I don't think we get that.
Me neither.
I think if we don't have a Bethesda showcase this year, Bethesda specific thing this year, it's going to be very telling of how they go about it going forward. Because I think if they don't have this year, I don't think we get a Bethesda specific direct ever again. I think they treat it as individual banger games. Yeah. Like, when we have an individual banger title, we'll have that. Or, I mean, if, say, BlizzCon, they have the discussion with BlizzCon and go, actually, yeah, like, we want to make this more encompassing of Xbox. We want to have this represent Xbox a bit more. You do the Xbox game showcase And then after that, you follow that up with the Blizzard Showcase one year. Maybe the year after, it's Bethesda. And then maybe another year, it's Activision or whatever. Yeah, very fascinating to see how they do it. You know, I try to find the amount of studios Xbox owns now, and I couldn't find an accurate number. Like, the first thing that popped up was, like, 23. But I think that might have been before Bethesda. Yeah, it was definitely before Activision. It's like, how many do you have now?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Xbox probably doubles the amount that PlayStation has, right?
Easily. Yeah. Easily doubles PlayStation, yeah.
And so, yeah, like, how do you package that stuff up? I mean, I would imagine you keep a lot of these cons and
that's the thing, the hyper specific things, like even thinking about what the Bethesda showcase has been, right? Like every single year, even when they had the bangers, like let's just treat it as like one of their better years, and I'm mixing and matching a little bit here, but it's like they'll have the Fallout 4, but they'll also have a Doom, you know?
Yeah,
it's like there's two big things that are to potentially the same groups, but also to different groups. But then in between, it's like, here's the update on Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah.
Here's the update on VR things we're doing.
The 2015 Bethesda Showcase is still one of my favorite showcases, because that was, here's a big presentation on Fallout 4. Here's Doom in the gameplay. Here's Dishonored 2.
Fallout Shelter.
And that was a single showcase. All of that is now part of Xbox.
Yeah, I know.
And so to like have that and then also talk about the Halos of the world and talk about Gears of the world. Oh, but also we need to figure out where to put Call of Duty, right? Mm-hmm. And Call of Duty, probably its own event. Like that's probably not going to be a thing you package in.
And it's interesting too, because like to your point, it's like certain projects have, like they can be in different places, but like Indiana Jones feels at home at the Xbox showcase. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
A Wolfenstein, if they were to announce one, that feels at home at the Xbox showcase. A World of Warcraft? Doesn't could
not yet
that change though.
I feel like it wasn't like that a few years ago with Bethesda, right? Like the idea of, oh man, Xbox showcase is happening, we could see Doom, we could see these things like be presented as Xbox. I think it's taken a little bit for us to get there, and I think we're finally getting to that point.
Yeah,
in the next, let's say, 3 to 4 years, are we gonna get that to that point with Blizzard and Activision? I don't know if it's like the right move, though.
I mean, I do think it's the right move, and I've been saying this. I think the quicker they can just get to where Xbox and here's our studios, I think it's going to benefit them and their games and their pipeline. But I do think Xbox clearly has been aware of the fact that they have so much to talk about, and that's why they've been, I think, great with their developer underscore directs of having these like smaller showcases to kind of like give a roadmap for people for what to expect throughout the year. I mean, like the one that we just saw with Avowed and with Indie and all of that, it's like, that was a developer underscore direct, right?
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, that's awesome, right? I feel like it kind of is like they have these different places they're building to be able to talk about all the projects in the right ways. And I think having the June showcase be their big year tentpole thing, but then we also have Gamescom. We also have Game Awards. Yeah. We also have Summer Game Fest, although they probably won't do anything there.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is it almost feels untenable having so many things to possibly talk about, because I think it does get lost in the shuffle with each other. Like, what happens in a... So let's go back to last year, where they had the Starfield underscore direct, and that was the big thing. Like, this is what we're all focused on. I think you're going to have, now that you have Activision Blizzard, you're going to have years where you have the big Bethesda game, but then also we have a big Blizzard thing to talk about.
I mean,
and Call of Duty comes out every single year.
Like,
and then also maybe you have a new Halo. Like, there's so many big things. And I don't think you still have all the rest of your things to talk about as well and promote. I think that's where you get into the advantage of, hey, if we keep these things separate, like let's attach Xbox. Let's let people know that this is Xbox, but let's keep Blizzard as an iconic Xbox brand, right? Let's keep Bethesda as an iconic thing. And I think the place we might disagree is like, I almost think you can spread those out through the year, where you have the Blizzard showcase, you have the Xbox Game Studios. You have to figure out the branding of like how do you figure out that versus what Bethesda is, when Bethesda is technically an Xbox Game Studio, right? But like, you then have a Bethesda showcase happen separately. That way, your audience can follow like what's going on, and you're able to give those big games their big moments and not have things battle each other in the same stage. I think that's going to be a challenge for them.
It definitely is. I mean, the Call of Duty of it all, I think, is going to be so fascinating, because I feel like we've seen...
Yeah, Call of Duty gets its own showcase. Call like, of, just that game yeah, gets its own showcase
oh,
every year.
100%. But Call of Duty dedicates itself to coming up with new ways to talk about its games, where, like, for the longest time, it was in the early 2010s, it was like, all right, it's going to be at, depending on, like, who's winning at that point,
like, PlayStation or Xbox,
and, like, where they have their agreements. Like, Activision didn't have its own press conference. And if it did, it was like more of a party. It was more of a, hey, Eminem and Rihanna are here. And yeah. they're singing. They're
it would
rapping.
Even be like, which one was it? I think it was, there was one of the ones that, yeah, it was the Eminem and Rihanna one where I think that E3, I want to say it was an Activision showcase, or maybe it was Xbox, because it might have been 2013. But like they had it at E3, and then months later, around Gamescom time, I don't think it was at Gamescom, but like in August, it was, all right, now here's the reveal of the multiplayer, yep. and yeah, here's Eminem and Rihanna,
and
here's
that's the
dog.
Thing is, you know, and we're talking in a pre-Warzone era, but like Call of Duty kind of created its own marketing beats surrounding E3 time, where it's like, here's multiplayer, here's single player, and it's like they've had their own cadence that I think that they've refined over the years. I feel like with where Call of Duty is now, adding Warzone, adding just everything, adding the Xbox element, I'm so interested yeah. in like what the pipeline and roadmap is going to look like.
Yeah, I think Call of Duty is the one where it's like, don't even put this in the Xbox showcase. Like maybe put like a trailer, like a 30-second yeah. trailer. Like something really, we don't need to break down Call of Duty at the Xbox thing. Call of Duty needs to be its own thing. Like let that, because you don't, I think that takes away some of the air from the Xbox showcase Xbox doesn't do much for Call of Duty. Call of Duty does things for itself. Yeah, totally. And so you take this away. I would even say the same for like Blizzard's main stuff. If we ever get to an Overwatch 3 or if we like Warcraft type shit, right? How much does that add to an Xbox showcase? And how much does an Xbox showcase add to that stuff? I don't know if it's that much, right? Like let's take that. Let's put it in its own bucket. I think Indiana Jones is probably the prime example of that game is being developed by a Bethesda studio, right? That's coming from Machine Games. I think a Xbox showcase does benefit it. And I think I think that works the other way around too, where it benefits an Xbox showcase as well.
Yep.
And so I think we're getting to that point with those games. But yeah, I think the picking and choosing of how do we bucket these things? How do we market these things? Is going to be really interesting as we go forward.
Totally.
Tim, before we go forward to story number two, I want to tell you about patreon.com/kindoffunny and youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can go and get the Kinda Funny membership, which allows you to get shows ad free. Speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Kinda Funny turns 9 years old today. We could have made it 9 days without your support. That's why 2024 is all about doubling down on our shows and making it simpler than ever for you to get the most out of our content. Our revamped Kinda Funny membership is your one-stop shop for all our amazing content, which now includes on a weekly basis, the Kinda Funny podcast, In Review, the Kinda Funny Gamescast, P.S. I Love You, XOXO, the Kinda Funny Xcast, the brand new series Kinda Funny Game Showdown. Five episodes of Kinda Funny Games Daily, and five exclusive Gregway vlogs.
And 5 days of streaming fun with me and the gang here in our newly revamped streaming space. It's gonna be filled with a ton of laughter and a whole lot of shenanigans. We'll see you there.
That's more than 20 pieces of content a week from an 11-person independent team in San Francisco. That's a lot. And to get the most out of it, all we're asking for is $10. $10 gets you the Kinda Funny membership, and that entitles you to ad-free versions of the shows, the ability to watch the podcast live as we record them, and the exclusive access to my daily show, Gregway. You can get your Kinda Funny membership on patreon.com/kindoffunny or youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Yes, we are expanding our Kinda Funny membership offering to YouTube, so people can take full advantage of the platform they prefer. If you want to go above and beyond the Kinda Funny membership to support us, we will still have higher Patreon tiers, albeit with some changed up perks. We just wanted to make the message as clear as possible that the $10 Kinda Funny membership is for the masses to get all the core content people love. Everything above that is very appreciated. The support means the world to us. You all are the best. But the $10 Kinda Funny membership available on both patreon.com/kindoffunny and youtube.com/kindoffunnygames is where we see the value of what we do. Kinda Funny is a dream come true, and we wouldn't have it without you. We hope if you've ever enjoyed the content, you can support us for at least a month as we prepare for our biggest year ever. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
And we're back. And yeah, that was just breaking news. And so we're finally moving on to story number two. Stellar Blade's day one update adds new game plus. This is Tom Ivan at Video Games Chronicle. Stellar Blade's new game plus mode has been made available earlier than expected. While developer ShiftUp previously said it planned to make new game plus available after the game's release on April 26th, it's available to download as part of the title's day one update, according to GamesRadar. Quote, in new game plus, all your equipment, currency, items, and records, character enhancements, drone upgrades, acquired skills, and owned SP that you have gained up until the previously completed game's progress will transfer to the next game, reads the in-game update prompt. However, your game progress will reset and will not carry over, end quote. In a PlayStation blog post detailing Stellar Blade's new game plus mode, ShiftUp director Kim Hyung-tae said it includes, quote, expanded gear levels, new costumes to wear, and a suite of new skills, end quote. You love to see it.
You do love to see it. I love that. Day one, new game plus, as all things should be.
Do you have any interest in Stellar Blade? I'm not talking to you about this game.
Andy was selling me on the demo for it, like showing me the boss fight. I was like, oh, this is awesome. I haven't picked it up since. There's just been a lot of different games I've been dabbling in and playing. And it's weird where like I want to give it a shot just to see how it feels. But, like, I'm just not interested in the game.
Yeah.
There's a lot about it, and especially with all the discourse around, I'm just like, eh.
Yeah. I will say, like, yeah, there is, like, the discourse has been disheartening because I think there's, like, a strong 80% of the discourse that I would say is not ShiftUp's fault, where there is a 20% where it is, like, the whole thing with having to patch out the shit, and then also, like, there is, like, the character designs, if you like them, if you don't like them, all this shit, that where I'm like, yeah, that's kind of on y'all. But I will say I could see you liking this game. I don't think it's a must play necessarily. I don't even think it's a Tim Gettys must play.
Yeah.
But knowing you and knowing that how you like things like Devil May Cry, and I know you like action games in general, I think there might be something there for you just in its style. I don't know if you would love it. I think you would like it though.
I'm gonna play it for at least a bit just because I want to know how it feels, because feel is so important to me when it comes to these type of games. But yeah, things about it definitely look cool. There's just a lot of things about it that I'm just like, I don't like it.
That's fair. Moving on to story number three, Garry's Mod is removing 20 years worth of Nintendo-related items from its Steam Workshop following a takedown request. This is Andy Chalk at PC Gamer. Following a takedown request issued by Nintendo, the famed physics sandbox Garry's Mod is removing all Nintendo-related stuff from its Steam Workshop. Quote, some of you may have noticed that certain Nintendo-related workshop items have recently been taken down, Facepunch Studios said in a Steam update. This is not a mistake. The takedowns came from Nintendo. Honestly, this is fair enough. This is Nintendo's content, and what they allow and don't allow is up to them. They don't want you playing with that stuff in Garry's Mod. That's their decision. We have to respect that and take down as much as we can, end quote. The, quote, not a mistake line may have been prompted in part by earlier DMCA claims against Nintendo-related mods that some Garry's Mod players claimed were fraudulent. It's not clear whether that was actually the case, but it seems to definitely not be the case now. Another one bites the dust.
And yeah, man, it's complicated, but at the end of the day, it's like, it is what it is, you know? Like, I know it's like, I feel like the popular take on this is to be like, fuck you, Nintendo. But like, we're doing a Pokemon ROM hack thing right now. And Nintendo would be like, guys, stop. Yeah. I'd be like, I get it.
It's so funny because like, it's funny in comparison to our conversation earlier, two days ago, about like the whole Samus and Fortnite shit, right? Because like, I'm like kind of on the opposite side of this where I'm like, just turn a blind eye. Like, you don't have to go after people. Just turn a blind eye. Like, I on the level of, you know, listen, Nintendo, you Like, you're not making half these games anyway. Like, it's Gary's Mod. This is what it's all about. Like, let people fucking do shit. You don't have to see it. you don't have to, like, what's this taking away from Nintendo sales? What's this taking away from Nintendo's identity? Just let people do fun. Let somebody put Mario in Gary's Mod. Mario's Mod.
Yeah.
Let's let him do it. Just turn a blind eye.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's illegal shit. People do illegal shit. And then you either care if you get caught or you don't.
Yeah.
Such is life.
Stay safe out there.
Stay safe out there, Gary.
Story number four, Hunter x Hunter, Nen Impact first gameplay has been revealed. I'm pulling from George Foster at The Gamer. The first gameplay footage for Hunter x Hunter Nen Impact has been revealed from a demo version of the game, although some fans don't seem too impressed with the graphics.
I'm not. I was about to talk a lot of shit. You see this?
Listen, I'll talk about it in a second. Over on YouTube, anime gaming channel PS360 HD2, which is the most YouTube channel name I've ever read in my life, posted 13 minutes of gameplay from Hunter x Hunter Nen Impact, which has apparently been taken from a demo version of the game. As most of us were expecting from an 8-inch game, the gameplay seems very similar to other 3v3 tag fighters such as Marvel vs. Capcom 3, right down to the pre-match intros painting to the side as they begin. Here's the thing. I think what we got here is the best we were ever going to get from Hunter x Hunter 2D fighting game being developed by 8-inch. Like, would it be great if it looked like Dragon Ball FighterZ? Yes.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not being developed by Arc.
Yeah.
And... yeah, like, this could be so much worse. This could have been the Arena Fighter.
Okay, you're right. It could be worse. It could be better.
I don't, but I think in the realistic world that we live in, I don't think it could be better.
Yeah.
I think that we just got to work with this. And I, for one, I look at this and I'm like, yeah, I'll play this for a solid, maybe 3 days. Maybe more if I get friends that are into it. Hunter x Hunter is dope. Yeah. I will say Hunter x Hunter is one of those franchises that... you could maybe give to an Arc System Works. I understand that it's not Dragon Ball in terms of popularity, but it is very popular. Yeah. So many people really, really like Hunter x Hunter. Like, it has a ravenous fan base. And I think if Arc System were to make a Hunter x Hunter game that was in the vein of Dragon Ball FighterZ, it would sell. It wouldn't sell as much as Dragon Ball FighterZ, but it would definitely sell. It would sell millions.
Millions.
Yeah, but I think it would be the coming together of Arxis fans and Hunter x Hunter fans.
Yeah.
Most people would be the Arc fans that are buying it. But when I say millions, I'm saying like 2 million.
A Jurassic Park game, that's not a good example. Like a Seinfeld fighting game would also sell millions.
No, well, there's the crossover.
It's Arc fans,
there's a crossover between fighting game fans and Hunter x Hunter fans.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fair. That is
fair. I'm sure there's a crossover between Seinfeld fans too and fighting game fans. But yeah. I'll play this. I think it looks fun enough. Look, it's good enough for me. It's better than I thought.
At this honestly seems like a one of those flash mods of Tatsunoko versus Capcom on the Wii, but just running on an emulator, so it's a slightly higher res, and they just put different assets in.
Listen, when you're starving, you take a cracker.
We're not starving as fighting game fans.
But
right now.
As somebody who likes Hunter x Hunter and also would love a game that is Hunter x Hunter. Like, if this was Yu Hakusho, the way I'd be like, fuck it. This looks like game of the year for me. I get how and I know Hunter x Hunter and Yu Hakusho, same creator too. So I understand the hype. I understand there are going to be people that show up to the GameStop at midnight, pick this thing up, get home at 1 a.m. and they sit down with them and their homeboy Bobby and their other homeboy, I don't know, Jeff, and they start playing this and they spend the whole night playing this. Like, people are going to devour this.
Yeah.
How long they devour it for, we'll see. But there are people that are fucking hyped. People are fucking. Story number five, Outriders developer People Can Fly has canned Project Dagger. This is Chris Kerr at Game Developer. Outriders dev People Can Fly has canceled an upcoming action-adventure title codenamed Project Dagger following a reanalysis of its development plans. The decision to scrap the project will result in the studio writing off between PLN $68.3 million, which is $16.9 million, and $19.7 million. People Can Fly didn't share specifics when explaining why Project Dagger has been scrapped, but said its plans changed due to unsatisfactory results of the evaluation of the scope and commercial potential of the project after redefining the direction of the game's development. Project Dagger has struggled to take flight for a number of years. The title was initially slated to be co-developed and published by Take-Two Interactive, but that agreement was terminated in September 2022. At the time, People Can Fly CEO Sebastian Wojciechowski said the studio parted with the Take-Two on good terms and strongly believed in Project Dagger's potential. At the stage, the game was still in pre-production and was in the process of being migrated from Unreal Engine 4 to Unreal Engine 5. Hard cut to November 2023, and there are more signs of upheaval. People Can Fly issued a statement explaining it would be redefining the direction of Project Dagger to address feedback obtained during an external evaluation. At the time, People Can Fly said that pivot would result in Project Dagger missing its 2025 to 2026 launch window. Now it looks like the title will never see the light of day. I didn't see what Kevin brought
Kevin up. Just brought up the People Can Fly logo, and I just think, like, shout out to Chris Kerr, a game developer, for writing the line, Project Dagger has struggled to take flight for a number of years, referring to a People Can Fly game, which is just,
that's
just
actually really, I
it's
miss
just
that.
Good. Yeah, so look, This is potentially, I mean, this is sad, right? Because Outriders was a very fun game, and I think it is an example of success in a very difficult industry to find success for a game like that. That's just a video game, man. You know what I mean?
sometimes people just want to make video games.
You said that, you know, and sometimes video games can just hit as a video game. And the people that are playing them are like, man, it's a video game.
Yeah.
You know? And like, I think that Outriders did that. So it's like, I'm rooting for People Can Fly, and I want to see more success. So it's a bummer to hear that, like, this project they're working on, they're going to stop because it's just not working. Like, that's, you don't want to see those type of setbacks, especially where we're at right now, because if that wasn't working, what happens next? You know,
my question is, what is Project Dagger? Like, I read through all that. None of it says, like, what the game was.
Upcoming action adventure title.
Is that all we know?
All you need to know, man, it's a video game. They're making a video game. They're making another video game. Yeah. But, you know, it is very concerning because if the project they've been working on is getting written off, sure, they're going to write off of these millions of dollars. I don't know what that actually means for them.
Yeah.
But when are they going to start making money again? Because if they don't, how long are they going to exist?
Yeah. Yeah. People Can Fly is an interesting one because I think they're working on, like, a lot of projects, if I remember correctly. And so, yeah, I wonder where this fell into their plans, and, like, this game falling through, I wonder what that means for the rest of their plans. Like, was this a, yeah, like, this is going to be another Outriders and it sucks, we're not going to make it, but we got these five other games? Or is this one where it's like, fuck, we're
this
really,
was the one.
Yeah, we were really relying on Project Dagger. But we'll have to wait and see what comes of it. But Tim, Project Dagger maybe has a possibility of being a big game.
Yeah, but Dagger's so small, though. But
yeah, Dagger is really small. If I wanted something else small, say the tiniest news I need to know about, where would I go?
You'd go to our last story, the Wii News channel, where we cover all the small news items that you need to know about.
That's right. Story number six is Wii News. This first one comes from PlayStation. They say, today we announced that Community Game Help, a new enhancement for Game Help, is now available through our latest PS5. Kevin, are you a big fan of Game Help? Or is that just part of Wii News?
Nah, I just wanted to do it.
Fair enough.
I like the blue smoke. That was pretty.
With this update, users can now opt in to Community Game Help from the settings menu and contribute their gameplay for other players to watch, learn from, and rate. I feel like we're losing the plot here.
Yeah.
Because they're just, is this not just YouTube? Is this not just YouTube
there,
guides?
Though. It's right there.
Like,
I think this is cool.
I think, but I feel like, is this not one of those things that people should get paid for also? Is this not just guides writing or guides YouTubing?
That's a whole other.
They're creating an IGN within PlayStation.
Somebody has to.
It's cool, but also, like, I feel like at this point, I just go to IGN or I just go to YouTube, type in how to find the Blood Fang.
But I mean, just when you're there, I don't want to have to do all that. How many times have I been sitting there and I'm like, I'm just stuck here and, like, this isn't fun anymore. I just want to move on. I just need to know what to do to go. And I'm like, do I need to pull out my phone? I don't want to do all that.
Here's my thing, though, right? Because this is coming from the users, and they're uploading their things and people are finding them and sharing and all this stuff. Imagine you're at your wit's end, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to solve this puzzle. And you can't figure out how to solve the puzzle. And Atreus isn't doing the thing where he tells you the exact solution to the puzzle. So you're like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? And you're like, fuck it. I'm going to do the PlayStation Game Help. And you you press the button and you bring up somebody's gameplay that's supposed to help you out. And it's the user named PimpJuice555.
Yeah.
And PimpJuice555 is just teabagging.
That's the thing. It's like, we'll see if that is what this turns into. I have a different theory. No one's going to use this.
That's a good theory. No, that's a really good theory.
But honestly, the amount of times I've been playing a PlayStation game and I'm like, ah, I'm just frustrated with this. Then I try to pull up the game help thing that they do have. Mm-hmm. It is, I don't want to say never been helpful, but it's rarely been
helpful. So it was helpful in like the first 6 months of PS5 being out where people were actually using it. But since then, there's no, in the last 3 years, I'll say, there's not been one time where I'm like, oh man, I'm stuck. Let me use the game help. Click the
button.
That's
what I'm looking for.
And yeah, it's exactly what I'm looking for. It so rarely happens. Fallout 4 for PS5 and Xbox Series X is out today. Another Crab's Treasure is out today. Wrath Aeon of Ruin hits PS4 and Switch today. Lasfanga, the Time Shift Warrior, launches May 14th on Nintendo Switch. And this comes from Wario64. Capcom is delisting Dark Void, Dark Void Zero, and Flock on May 8th at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, according to the Steam pages. And that's it.
That's it, everyone.
For Wii News. Before we get out of here, I want to pull in some super chats. Scorpion Brew writes in and says, Tim, I want to say thank you for recommending Prince of Persia. It was the first Metroidvania I actually completed.
Hell yeah.
Now I platinumed Tales of Kinzera in a day.
In a day?
That's awesome.
Platinumed in a day. That's awesome.
That's wild.
Dude.
I didn't know you could do that.
Very cool.
DJ Kento says, take a look at Super Mario Sunshine ROM hack, Super Mario Eclipse. I think it'd make Andy cry. Looks really fun, though.
Mario Eclipse is a dope ass name for a Sunshine mod.
Yeah. They should make that name for a real Mario game.
Go for it.
Super Mario Eclipse. Rich Pelosi says, Tim, Thousand Year Door make use of HD Rumble? Joy-Cons needed?
I'm sure that it's going to. I don't actually know, but all Nintendo games do to some extent. I don't think it's going to be a game changer, like it's a necessity, but I'm a Rumble boy, bless.
Yeah?
I love HD.
Because I was going to say, I feel like Rich Pelosi is the only person that's writing talking about like, are they using the HD Rumble on this thing?
HD Rumble and all the DualSense haptic stuff, man, I'm obsessed with it. And when Rumble doesn't feel that good, it takes away my immersion from games. Like, I really want good Rumble. And I do think Nintendo and PlayStation are like leagues ahead of everyone else right now.
Nintendo's HD Rumble, I think it's neat, but it's never struck me as that impressive. Whereas I still remember playing Returnal and like feeling the raindrops on my controller and like that feeling like, shit, there's actual rain in my controller.
My thing is whenever I went on my journey to find the perfect Switch Pro Joy-Cons. And that's really what made me realize like, oh, playing Mario Kart, going over the coins, it's not the big ass over Turtle, you're feeling the rain stuff, because that game's developed that way. Game's developed to be this big AAA thing. It's more just like the overtime chip damage of every single rumble feels better on the Switch.
Okay.
Like, every single little thing just feels good. Like in Metroid Prime, like when you're charging up the shot.
I do like how that feels.
The way it feels, it's like, oh, this is good. This is how it's supposed to be. And I would honestly say that the DualSense and any of the Joy-Cons or Pro Controller from Nintendo, anything with HD Rumble, they're on par. Like, I would say that they are equal.
Wait, between PlayStation and Nintendo?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I don't know if I'm there.
Because the thing, the difference is PlayStation also has the haptic like feedback stuff too that Nintendo doesn't have, so like there's more things that it has. But in terms of just the rumble,
I would be so I see what you're saying there. I would be so down for Nintendo Switch 2 or whatever they call the next gen console to have like actual haptic feedback. I think if they had that, it'd be like, fuck, this is like, I think that would, like, when you're talking about like the Mario Kart stuff, right, I can imagine Mario Odyssey 2 or whatever it is running around and feeling all the pitter patters of Mario.
I mean,
feet.
You do. I feel like you do kind of. I feel like you're not like, if you were to do like an A/B test, I think you'll realize like how good the Nintendo ones actually are.
I might
like,
try to go back
even
and,
just
like,
pop
attention.
In Odyssey, dude, and run around and like just spinning Cappy around. Like, there's, you feel exactly where things are supposed to be. Everyone jokes about the ice cubes. They're real, man.
The ice cubes.
Yeah, remember that 1-2 switch.
Oh yeah, oh, that was impressive. That is true. Dan Bruce Shirt says, can I get a shout out for my birthday? Stoked to try Paper Mario Thousand Year Door for the first time. Happy birthday, Dan.
Happy birthday, Dan. That's awesome. And man, I'm just so happy people are gonna get Paper Mario Thousand Year Door for the first time, and it's this version.
Yeah.
Oh, it's gonna be good.
I can't wait. And then Guitar Hero Arrow writes in, I'm reading ahead to make sure this isn't spoilers.
It's fine.
Okay, Sephiroth's theme in Remake was titled One Winged Angel Rebirth. In Rebirth, it's One Winged Angel Reborn. Confirmed, Part 3's title, Final Fantasy VII Reborn.
I'd be surprised, but hey, this is a good theory here.
Yeah, I like that.
It does line up.
We'll Reborn. See. I like that.
And then Joel Poots is a Kind of Funny member for the first time.
Oh, welcome
Joel.
In.
Thank you.
That's it for your YouTube Super Chats. Before we get out of here, let's hop into You're Wrong to see what we got wrong as we got it wrong. And we only got one here from Len S., who says, hold on, let me close this pop-up. Tim said Outriders was successful, but People Can Fly told investors it was not profitable in June 2023, 2 years after release.
That's a bummer. Damn, I definitely would have assumed it did better sales-wise than that, because I feel like critically and consumer-wise, I would chalk it up as a success, but success doesn't mean shit unless you got that cash money.
Dude, games are so expensive to make. That's the unfortunate thing, is I feel like you look at Outriders and it's like, all right, like, surely your expectations for what this is going to make back aren't off the chain. But I guess you also got to remember that game was published by Square Enix, I'm pretty sure. And so I could see that being like a, all right, we're betting big on this, and then it just not making the profit that they wanted to.
I want to read a quote real quick here. The group received no royalties from the publisher for the period to March 31st, 2023, which means that as of time of reporting, net proceeds from the sale of Outriders were insufficient to recover the costs and expenses incurred by the publisher to develop, distribute, and promote the title.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wait, so they made no money from Outriders. That's upsetting.
Yeah.
Damn, dude. Business is rough.
Business is rough out there, man.
Well, that's it for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Of course, each and every weekday, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about live on YouTube, Twitch, and on podcast services around the globe. If you love what we do, support us with the Kind of Funny membership on Patreon or YouTube to get all of our shows ad-free, watch, score them live, and get a daily exclusive show. Until next time, Game Daily.